that, we've got company.
Hello.
Trust me, Hera, I'm excited. This is my excited face.
No, oh, this makes me so happy.
I like you. You don't fit in around here either.
All right, if I tag along?
More the merrier.
Get ready to be impressed.
You ready to be impressed, Tam?
I'm completely ready.
Bright suns, everyone. You're listening to The Geeky Bubble. I am your host, Jonah, and with me is the mysterious tentacle creature from the depths of the ocean to my two unsuspecting characters training in a boat, my mom, Maria.
Oh my God, how long it took you to get that one?
I honestly couldn't come up with anything, and that was the only thing I could come up with.
Hello, today we're going to discuss the season 3 episode, The Harbinger.
Yes, so in the last episode, things ended on a somewhat ominous note. So Fennec had contacted someone, and that someone turned out to be exactly who we thought. We suspected all along, Asajj Ventress. And I'm curious, Mommy, what were your thoughts about this episode? Your overall thoughts?
I found it entertaining. I liked it. Are there a few points that I would love to have been different or things that I would have loved to have been addressed? Yeah, like with everything. But I liked it. I liked that it wasn't a simple thing that she came and did tests with Omega and talked to the clones and show Asajj as Asajj.
Right. So you're saying that there was more to it than just that?
Yeah. There has to be more. What is she doing out there?
Oh, you're saying that there's more to her story that we don't know about yet.
Yeah.
I gotcha. Oh, yeah, that obviously we couldn't get in this episode because the focus of it is Omega and her supposedly high M count, but they don't really know whether that's the case or not. Yeah, so yeah, what is Asajj's story? That's what we all want to know. In addition to, you know, because we already know what to expect with Omega. We know that the Emperor's after her for this particular reason with her blood. The Bad Batch still don't know that reason. But there are still other questions we want to know about. Like, you know, what has Asajj been up to this entire time?
How did she come back?
Who did it, you know?
Yeah.
So, curious questions. Obviously, things that could not be answered in this episode because then you're completely overshadowing what's going on with the Bad Batch, but hopefully we will get those answers down the line at some point. So I personally enjoyed it. I thought bringing Asajj back into the story, even though her appearance was very brief, I thought she was going to be in it for like at least another episode, was interesting. Some people said that it was strange to bring her in and that she kind of felt out of place, but after giving it a lot of thought, I thought she was a great fit, especially because she's a bounty hunter, so that would explain her connection with Fennec. And she's a Force user, so that would, you know, help explain or help fill in some of the blanks for the Bad Batch. I still would have liked a little bit, just a little tiny something in there to connect it back to Dark Disciple, like a something a little bit more overt in the dialogue specifically, because there were some definitely visual cues here and there, but I would have liked like just a tiny, tiny little. That's all I wanted. But yeah, overall, I enjoyed it. I thought it was a great episode, even though the Bad Batch still are kind of like in that point of not really knowing what's going on with Omega.
Which begs the question, what was the point?
I think the point was, one, I think this served as like a backdoor pilot to possibly a different series down the line. So with introducing Asajj, I think they're setting up the stage for something that's going to happen later. But I also think it was important for them to eliminate, they couldn't get the answer outright. So I think they eliminated like the, what's that expression? You eliminate your choices,
process of elimination.
Yes, process of elimination. Yeah, so through the process of elimination, they can now eliminate the idea that she's force sensitive. They still don't have the answer, but at least they can take that off the table. And yeah, I thought it was great for Omega to get to know Asajj. Who knows, maybe Asajj could be an integral part of her life down the line that we don't know about yet. So maybe this is just the seed.
Okay. Like I said, I liked it. I didn't have any issues with it. I was just curious as to, like, what was the whole reasoning of building up or bringing Asajj, you know?
Right, like, yeah. Yeah, I think that still has to be revealed to us in, like, the grand scheme of things. So it's one of those things that we just have to, like, put a pin on it for now. Because maybe in the next 6 episodes or so, it will become a little bit clearer. Or who knows, maybe in a different series, it'll become clearer.
Probably. You talk felonese better than I do. Oh.
That is a hilarious way to describe Dave's train of thoughts. Speaking of Dave, so Brad Rao, who is an executive producer on the show, he said, when Dave Filoni brought up the idea of bringing Asajj into the Bad Batch, we were beyond excited. So Dave was the one who suggested the idea of bringing Asajj into the Bad Batch. And it's like, yeah, that's totally a Dave thing to do. That's totally a Dave thing. But really, the execution came from Brad Rao and Jennifer Corbett, who I thought did a great job with bringing her in, of putting her into the episode. Out of curiosity, just to like play around with the idea, was there anyone else you think who could have fulfilled this role?
Plenty of others.
Oh, who do you have in mind then? Be specific, mommy.
You know me. I don't know people by names, and all these timelines get confusing.
Yeah, it is kind of confusing after a while.
Is what's his name? Obi-Wan.
Obi-Wan.
Is Obi-Wan around?
Yes, he is around. So, but he would be in Tatooine. He's looking after little
baby Luke.
Little baby Luke, yeah.
Who else is around this time?
Ahsoka would be around in this time, but I don't think
Ahsoka, we've gotten Ahsoka too much, so yes. It would be like an overkill.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. Yeah, I think, and also I don't think she's there mentally right at this time. I think she's still finding herself, I would like to say. Personally, I think Quinlan Vos would have been a great person to insert there. So I think he has a really good understanding of the...
And he's more of... I will say he has more of the characteristics of the Bad Batch.
Yeah.
More of the warrior side.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. He also has like a really good understanding of... the light side of this force and the dark side of the force because of what he had been through in Dark Disciple. And he's also really great with kids. He loves kids. So I think he and Omega would have gone along really well.
That would have been nice.
That would have been interesting. But Asajj, I think, has an even better understanding and more experience when it comes to the force, especially the dark side of the force. And she's also a survivor. And you know, the Bad Batch and Omega have had to struggle to survive. Yeah. So I think she was like the better person to help with Omega understanding at least part of herself, even though she's not really force sensitive in the traditional sense. She could potentially become force sensitive down the line, but I thought she was a good guide for this episode. But Wrecker and Crosshair start off the episode by loading supplies into a woman's boat. And I love how Wrecker teases him for it. He says, "Aw, you made a new friend." Like, that's such a little baby brother thing to do. And I thought, it was a very cute moment. But did you feel the tension, Mommy, between Crosshair and Asajj?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah! Yes!
when he extended the hand, I was like, oh yeah, baby, come on.
Amazing. So, I mean, I'm a diehard Asajj and Quinlan fan. Like, this is they're my end game. They're the OTP, the one true pair for me. But, you know, I'll admit, I saw something there. I saw some potential there with Crosshair. I could see it. But yeah, putting those shippy thoughts aside, when Crosshair offered his hand to Asajj, it felt like he understood her. and he understood where she was coming from, especially after that conversation with Omega in the ship the previous night. Because Omega had mentioned that people can change, but then he said, "You're being naive." To which she said, I never gave up on you. Yeah, I never gave up on you, did I? And I liked his reaction to that. Like, she was there for you, man.
She got me.
Yeah, she got you. So I like that he realized that he and Asajj aren't so different. They were used by different
forces,
evil forces, for their own gain. And they were casted aside.
Yeah.
So, I like how they're both trying to be better people here. And I love that he had extended his... I initially thought, oh, man, is he going to say, no, you stay behind? But I like that. It was the complete opposite of what I was thinking he was going to do.
I was, yeah, baby.
Yeah. let's see. So Omega and Batcher come across this cavern. And this is where Omega discovers Asajj. And it's also where a good chunk of the episode takes place. And caves tend to be important in Star Wars. But
yeah, there's a lot of caves in Star Wars. Yeah, right?
A lot of things happen in caves. I mean, there was obviously the very classic example with Luke on Dagobah with that cave that he goes into. And then, of course, the one that Rey finds when she's training with Luke. But I like these not so often used examples, specifically the one where Ahsoka in Star Wars The Clone Wars during the Mortis trilogy, she's in a cave with all those crystals and there's a fire burning and she sees an older version of herself in that cave. And then there was also the cave where Ezra, Kanan, Sabine, and all the others are following the Lothwolves.
Yeah.
And they get transported to that other cave on the other side of Lothal. And they end up finding those cave drawings in there. I personally think that was important for Kanan's story, but we didn't get to see Kanan's story fully. I personally theorize that Kanan was born on Lothal. I've seen the storyboards and I can read the blurred out captions in those storyboard images, but that's a story for another time. caves are important in Star Wars. You get to find some insight about yourself, gain some insights, learn something about yourself in those caves, to scare yourself sometimes, depending. But also what's really interesting is that Asajj's burial took place in a cavern. When Quinlan lays her to rest, he puts her in a pool of water, and that pool of water is inside a cavern. So what's neat is that when he does that, that's the last time we see her. That's the end of, supposedly the end of her journey. But it's really cool that the first time we see her again, she's emerging out of this cavern. For the first time. And I'm like, oh, this is genius. This is totally intentional. I picked up on it. I picked up on it. I'm so proud. But I was wondering, what was your immediate thought upon seeing her? And like when Omega puts the flashlight on her, what was your first thought?
I got scared.
You got scared?
Yeah, like, come on.
Did you think she had, bad intentions?
At this point, no. I wasn't sure because, yes, she does brought a point when talking with the Bad Batch is that the war is over and they both got used by forces that they didn't know and they're the ones who won. But you still... see the bad, you know.
Oh, I see that. All the things that she had done.
Yeah, exactly. You don't see the good.
Oh,
you don't,
okay.
So at that moment, I like, okay, what's gonna happen here?
I got
it. Is she gonna take it? Did she came for her to as a bounty? Well, right. What's gonna happen?
Yeah, you really didn't know at the time. Like you wanna hope, especially given her. I mean, you didn't read Dark Disciple, but I was hoping that based on that she would be there to help them and not necessarily be there as a bounty hunter like you thought, where she would take Omega and potentially give her over to the Empire. So yeah, it was really interesting, the different perspectives. So I really like how when we see her fully, she still has that snake on her shoulder piece. So she had that even in Star Wars, The Clone Wars, when we see her with Boba Fett and the other bounty hunters. So she was wearing it then, if I remember correctly. And according to StarWars.com, snakes are misunderstood creatures.
Okay.
Mommy, like, no, okay. Snakes are out to get me.
Yeah. Please, I'm not, nah.
Mommy, they're not all bad.
Nah. No, they slither on the floor, Mommy. They hide and they jump and get,
That's stereotypical. Mm-hmm. Those are stereotypes.
That's a snake. Okay, that's a snake.
Okay. Well, symbolically speaking, there's a variety of meanings across different cultures. So one of them I thought was really interesting. So in the West African kingdom of Dahomey, hopefully I said that right, they regard snakes as immortal because they appear to be reincarnated from themselves when they shed their skins. Snakes were often associated with immortality because they were observed biting their tails to form a circle. And when they coiled, they formed spirals. So both circles and spirals were seen as symbols of eternity. And the symbol has come to be known as the Ouroboros. And then snakes were regularly regarded as guardians of the underworld or messengers between the upper and lower worlds because they lived in the cracks and holes in the ground, which was really interesting when you think about it, because she was essentially a messenger, the harbinger, you know, making them aware that there are bad things to come if you continue staying here.
Yeah.
So I like that she was sort of a messenger of sorts. And snakes have been associated with some of the oldest rituals known to humankind and represent dual expression of good and evil. As snakes shed their skin, they are symbols of rebirth, transformation, immortality, and healing. So, yeah, really interesting things that you could apply to Asajj's journey. But Mommy is like, no, I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced. No. You cannot fool me.
I wish you all could see, because she's talking and I'm looking at her and I'm like shaking my head side by side.
You can't fool me. No. You're not going to get me with your words, Jonah.
No.
So it was funny how Omega said the information was for a friend, quote unquote, but then she fumbled.
Yeah, the moment she heard the word Jedi, she was like, oh, I'm a Jedi.
Yeah. That was so cute.
That was the moment in every child.
Yeah. So funny. But Asajj tells her everyone has an M count, but at varying levels. Those with a high M count were believed to be more capable of wielding the Force. And she also goes on to say, your blood doesn't make you a Jedi. You'd have to be trained for that. So I like how this connects back to Sabine in the Ahsoka series, because Sabine probably did not have a high M count, but because she trained and opened herself up to the Force, she was able to wield it. So I thought that was pretty neat.
And the one thing that I like is that without saying, no, she's not a Jedi, they're trying to tell you she's not a Jedi, mm-hmm. and that the issue with her blood has nothing to do with her own M count, but the M count of someone else.
Yes, yeah.
And this is a part that they still don't understand and they still don't know. Right. They're all so concentrated and so focused on the M count part that they're not seeing the bigger picture,
right,
as to why will you be making all those tests just to find out who has a high M count.
Right. Logically, it seems like it's heading in that direction to them, that, oh, it's because she has a high M count, and that's probably why the Empire, maybe Tech would have figured it out.
Yeah.
Where he would have been like, but what if it's because of something molecular or biological or cellular in her blood that makes it possible to have a high M count? Maybe that's what the Empire is seeking. But because they don't have Tech.
I'm still empty every time I see them all three something is missing.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
And I cannot believe they just took him away.
Yeah.
Like, nah.
But yeah, some people still think Omega is force sensitive, even after watching this episode. I'm like, no, let's go. Let's sit down. Let's have a conversation. Because I don't think what they were trying to say was Omega is force sensitive. I think Omega is not force sensitive. Omega just has the potential to become force sensitive. If she's like Sabine, she can train hard enough. But because of how her biological structure, whatever it is that makes Omega Omega internally on a cellular level, that has the potential to become force sensitive, because midichlorians could be transferred into her body through the blood, and the midichlorians would be able to stay at that high count. They wouldn't deteriorate.
Which is what the blood tests were all about. Yeah. Which is what I'm saying. Like, what wasn't clear enough? You know what I'm saying? Like, okay, I understand this is all entertainment. and we're writing stories here. But they do say when they're doing the experiments what they're looking for.
Well, no, she didn't actually. When Emery doesn't clearly state what they're for, she just says we're just testing various things. She never explicitly says.
But when she goes to, what is it that she says when she goes to Evil Guy?
Oh, Hemlock.
Yeah.
But mommy, Omega and the Bad Batch aren't present for that. It's just between Emery and Hemlock.
No, I'm not talking about Omega and the Bad Batch. I'm talking about everybody else.
Oh, you're talking about the audience. Like, yes. What aren't they getting? Oh.
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah. Like, why? And this is one of the frustrations, minor frustrations, not like a huge thing. But one of the frustrations I had with this episode is the fact that we already know this information. As the audience, as the people looking in, we already know this stuff because they've already clearly said it at the very beginning that the reason Omega is important is not because of some high count. It's because of the fact that when you transfer midichlorians to her blood, they sustain at that high level. They don't deteriorate like the other samples that they've tested. And so that's why Omega is important, because Palpatine needs that in order to properly clone himself and in order for those clones to have a high M count just as much as he does, for that legacy to continue.
To continue.
And I get that the Bad Batch still have to discover that.
Yes.
Which is why I was like, okay, well, if they don't get that direct answer here, at least through the process of elimination, they can eliminate the idea that she's force sensitive. Because she's not currently. She could become force sensitive through two ways. By training like Sabine did, or by being infused with midichlorians. Which I think might happen down the line.
That I can see.
Yeah.
Because if she's that important, something may happen. Either she will inject herself, somebody will inject her. Something is going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that's what I'm getting. And that's why that was one of my minor frustrations, but I could go around it and then see, okay, so this was more of a process of elimination rather than getting to the direct answer, because unfortunately they can't get to it. Asajj herself said, I don't know everything. So she doesn't know what experiments are happening on Tantus. No one does. And that's why it's been so frustrating, because they can't, at least frustrating to the Bad Batch, because they can't get the answers that they want, because the Empire is so tight-lipped about it. So yeah, my question to you is, do you like the idea of Omega being potentially force sensitive in the future? Because I know some people are against it, especially after Sabine became force sensitive. Although we all, and not we, because obviously we're not part of the Star Wars universe, but everyone in the Star Wars universe has the potential.
Well, we do know by what we know from Yoda that the cycle of the Jedi and the Sith is ever happening.
Yeah, it's cyclical. It's just cyclical. It happens. Yeah.
Like, so if one always overpowers the other has to find ways of coming back up.
Man, you are so smart right now.
And this is the way in which it, the good starts to come back up.
Man, the force awakens.
Yes. Mommy.
Oh my God.
You know,
wow. I really love how you phrase that. Yeah, you're so right. It is a constant thing. The Sith always overcoming the Jedi overcoming the Sith. It's a constant battle of good and evil.
And it's through ages. It's not something that happens one year to the next.
Right.
So it has to be built up.
And because of the fact that there was this Jedi purge that happened, there's not a lot of Jedi. I mean, there's a lot of Force-sensitive people out there, I imagine, but they're not trained.
Exactly.
And of course, there's a lot more people out there who don't have high M counts, who don't have that natural inclination, but can train to become Jedi.
And this is how it gets built up.
Yeah, and this is how you build back up the forces of good.
Again.
Yeah. Oh, God, I love that idea. I would love for Omega to be part of that.
Yes, of course.
She already has the values, the things that the Jedi should have had.
And it starts to become also, we know that in the time of Yoda and all the these Jedis that we know of more.
You mean like Obi-Wan and Mace Windu and all these other people?
On those times, the solution was to plug these kids out of their parents' homes to train them. Here, we're having the opportunity of more mature people, older people, deciding whether they want to go on or not.
Yeah.
Being a choice as opposed to something that gets...
A choice that's made for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And this is the point that Asajj brings up to the Bad Batch. If Omega has that potential, she's going to have to leave you.
Yeah.
In order to train. She can't train alongside you. You guys can't tap into that power, how you're able to train Omega. So and that's why I think some people are also hesitant about it, because if Omega does become Force sensitive, that would mean that she would have to leave the Bad Batch.
But then in their lives, the continuity of life and family, children grow up and leave the nest. They leave the family. It is their choice whether they leave or they stay, whether they leave and then come back. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's always the choice of the individual.
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
And this is what I like about all of these unexpected, Force-sensitive characters that we've seen, that they didn't start like that. They were allowed to progress on their own and then make the decision.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that is more valuable than anything else. That is for you to make your own choice.
Mm. Yeah, I really like that. Man, I'm so happy you're my podcasting partner. Thank you for saying yes all those years ago. I mean, you didn't have a choice, really.
No, I did not have a choice. When your kid comes with their wide big eyes or filled with joy, oh, Ma, do you want to do this? You have no heart to say no, even if you want to say no.
Oh, good times. So anyway, Asajj puts Omega through a few tests. And the second one was a test of Omega having to go to the tree up at the Archeum to grab a blossom. Do you think that second test was a legitimate test, or was that something Ventress totally made up to get Omega out of the way?
Yeah, it could be a test. It just was one of the opportunity that she needed in the moment. But it could be one, because it's one of resilience. What will you do? You have limited time.
Mm.
You've been given a task that
seems impossible. Yeah.
What resources will you use? Will you be thinking on your feet? Which is the reason why she passed that one. Because as she went going up the hill, she got tired and she knew she was never going to make it on her own. So she realized, I can use
Batcher. Yeah.
And that's how she did it. So she passed that one because of ingenuity. But we know Omega to be have that ingenuity.
Yes, that's
we
right.
We know it's she has that ability.
Of, part of her character.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, of course she was going to pass that one. But it was a test of opportunity because at the same time she's testing that ability of her to think on her feet. She's also giving her the time to fight this.
Whatever it is that the Bad Batch want to do to her.
To go all Jedi. Bad Jedi.
Wicked Jedi.
Wicked Jedi.
Or Force sensitive. Because she's really not a Jedi. And she's not a Sith either. She's just a Force user. Let's see. So Asajj's tests reminded me of the physical tests Ezra had to go through when he was part of the Imperial Academy in Star Wars Rebels. So he had like to do all these physical tests, and anyone who was above average or who seemed to excel was personally put aside to be examined by the Grand Inquisitor.
Yeah.
And then that's how he would determine whether they were Force sensitive or not. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really interesting that these tests, you know, we're reminiscent of that. And it was interesting seeing Asajj in a teaching mentoring role. I love when she like turned her chin, like focus, concentrate. you know, we had gotten a glimpse of that in Dark Disciple when she was training Quinlan Vos, but she was actually showing him the dark side of the Force, how to wield that. But here she's almost sort of like the Jedi Masters, like Yoda and even Depa Balava when she was training Kanan. So yeah, it makes me wonder if this is a backdoor pilot to something else, whether she will pick up an apprentice, whether that apprentice is Omega is yet to be seen, but whether she will pick up an apprentice the next time we see her, that would be really cool.
And what will she teach? Will she teach to wield the dark side?
No, I think...
Or will she teach to wield the light?
Yeah, you know? Because I think given what she does later on in the episode, I think it's more of a neutral light side.
Yeah.
Neutral to light.
neutral to light.
So you have the spectrum dark, neutral, light. So yeah, I think she's going to be neutral to light.
Which, again, is sort of a very not so direct way of showing, like, we should not deal in absolutes.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
You know, things are not just dark and light. Mm. There are many spectrums in between.
Right.
And just because at one point you may have been closest to the dark doesn't mean you're not capable of moving towards the light.
And it's a constant balance so that you don't fall back deeply into the dark. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Anyway, going back to the little weeping tree. Oh, not little. It was actually a big whipping tree. But going back to the whipping tree. And I didn't realize this, but weeping trees are actually a symbol of good luck and good fortune in various cultures, specifically like the Celtic and Druid. Apparently, when you knock on wood, the origin of that was from pagan beliefs. People believe that willow trees or trees in general brought good luck and that they would knock on the trunk to bring good fortune. And I was also reading that people once believed that malevolent spirits inhabited living trees. So you would knock on the trees to prevent the bad spirits from hearing your hopes and your wishes and to stop them from coming true. So yeah, the only reason I'm bringing this up is because weeping trees are a symbol of good luck and good fortune. You know, I'm curious whether maybe hopefully this is like a sign that there's still some hope that things might turn out okay in the series.
I don't want Pabu to be destroyed.
I know, but I honestly don't know what's going to happen with that, with the Empire.
I get it. It probably is not going to be the same again, but I don't want it to be destroyed completely.
I don't know. We will see. But and according to the Star Wars data bank, a rare white blossom is a sign of good luck, of good fortune. So here's hoping that means something. So then while Asajj is testing Omega, Crosshair approaches Hunter and Wrecker, and he confirms her identity. He said, "I checked text files from the Republic archives, And, you know, after Saj sends Omega away, I thought that would have been the perfect, it would have been the perfect opportunity for one of them to say to Saj, record state, you're supposed to be dead, or something to that effect, you know? And that could have been followed up with the line that she says later on in the episode, which is, I've got a few lives left. So something like that would have had a bit more kick to it.
Yes.
I think a little bit more umph.
Yeah. It felt too disconnected the moment and when she says it. Because we do get from her that something happened.
Yes.
But we get it in what it feels to be a more disconnected fashion.
Mm-hmm.
But that moment would have like been the perfect block union, you know?
Yeah, because they're already suspecting her of something wrong here, doing something evil.
Something nefarious.
Nefarious, exactly. So why not insert, oh, you know, record state, you're supposed to be dead. So yeah, that's my only thing. I wish there could have been a little bit more there, especially because it would have been nice to have a direct verbal reference to Dark Disciple aside from just the I've got a few lives left line. And it also would have prompted people who didn't know Saj to look into Dark Disciple. Like, why have official records marked her for dead? Like, that is a curious thing. And, you know, you get people to read the book if they're interested. And I know that Quinlan and Saj, what they did in the book was supposed to be a clandestine operation. So maybe that didn't go down in the record. But, you know, what's to stop Tech from having that information anyway, yeah. You know? So anyway, yeah, I thought that would have been a great opportunity to really sweeten it for the fans of the book. But that's just me being greedy. But I do love that she still has these faint dark lines. Yeah. Like, I freaked out when I saw it.
Yeah, I was there. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, I know. And you're like, what? What's going on?
What's going on? Because I haven't read the Dark Disciple, no. So I don't really. What I know of Saj is what I saw on The Clone Wars. Yes. That's it.
Yeah. So specifically the part I'm referring to is the part when she's in the water and she's using the force against the creature. And there's a close-up to her face. So on her face, you can see like these faint black lines. And those are remnants from when she was electrocuted in Dark Disciple. So I thought, Mommy, could you read this little excerpt here? Yeah.
Violently, she shoved Voss away, putting the force into the movement so powerfully that he was hurled across the room. As he struck the wall, he heard a terrifyingly familiar sound, the sizzle and crackle of force lightning. Dooku stood, his teeth bare, in a savage snarl of victory. Ventress was caught in the most violent bolts of force lightning Voss has ever seen. They danced and crackled about her hungrily, almost like living creatures.
Yeah, so, and then there was another little part that I had posted on Twitter. Voss saw that strange patterns now decorated Ventress's bone-white skin, traces of darker flesh that looked like lightning bolts. The Force lightning had marked her for its own.
Ventress had been put into stasis shortly after her death and been prepared respectfully at the Jedi Temple. Voss knew that Kenobi had recovered some of Ventress's clothing from the wreckage of the Banshee, but he was completely unprepared for what greeted him when he opened the lid. Saj Ventress's face was tranquil. Her hair had been washed and combed, her arms, their injuries repaired, and had been folded over her midsection. They still bore the dark tracings of the Force lightning that had claimed her life, but the marks were oddly beautiful, spidery, and graceful.
So yeah, that was really interesting how they kept those details in there. Like, you really have to have a magnifying glass to look at
them.
But yeah, for the book fans, just keep an eye out for it because it's really cool how they connected the two. And then that fight scene was super impressive, too, between Asajj and the Bad Batch. Oh, so good. So good. And I love how she caught the blade, the vibro blade that Hunter had tossed, and how she force-pushed Wrecker in the end. That was really cool. And there was also that great moment when Crosshair tosses the blasters back to Hunter and Wrecker, and you hear the Bad Batch theme playing in the background. Yeah. That was so cool. So I was going to ask you, Mommy, how do you think Tech would have reacted to Asajj?
Oh, he would have known right there. And he would have said something the moment he saw her.
Oh, that she's a war criminal?
You're a war criminal. You know, immediately, he would not have hesitated the moment he saw it.
I imagine him also being like on his pad.
Yeah.
Like making sure, confirming his analysis. I also like to think that Tech would have asked more questions.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, I liked how they went out to the water to continue Omega's training, because in Dark Disciple, part of Quinlan's training also took place in the ocean. So that was pretty neat. And I love the binoculars. Like, you have the three of them.
Them watching. And they're funny. Like, Wrecker says, I don't like this. And Hunter goes, we promise her. And then Crosshair says, I didn't.
Yeah. You're the one who promised. I didn't do anything. I loved it. It was so funny seeing them using their binoculars. And I loved when Asajj felt that someone was looking. Watching.
Yeah. And he goes, how does she know?
I know. I love his little gasp.
Yeah.
How does she know? When they're out there in the water, Asajj tells Omega, many who wield the Force have an affinity for nature. They connect with things that respond to their energy. And I love how that instantly reminded me of Ezra.
And his connection to animals.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I miss him. But, yeah, I also loved how in that first, one of the first things that Kanan teaches him is connecting to the Loth Cat.
Yeah.
And the Loth Cat just, like, snarls and, like, bites him. And it's because it's responding to his energy. He's feeling upset in that moment. So the Loth Cat is also going to feel upset. And then the sea creature, which is called a Varathian, reminded me of the Sleeper. So there's this ancient creature in Dark Disciple called the Sleeper. And it was located in the subterranean pools on Dathomir. And it's described to have, it's a supposedly changes based on the person who looks at it. But for the most part, it has two huge lavender eyes, a carapace-covered body, and appendages, like tentacles. And the Varathian that attacked Asajj on Omega also had lavender eyes, a carapace-covered body, and tentacles. So that was really cool. And for those who are not familiar with what happens in that part of the story, so Quinlan had to kill the Sleeper as part of his dark side training. But I love that Asajj peacefully connected with the Varathian without having to kill it. I was really happy to see that they didn't kill the Varathian, that she was able to connect with it in a very Jedi-like manner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More closest to the light.
Yes. And then Asajj comes to the conclusion that Omega doesn't have a high M count, but she also doesn't know why the Empire is after Omega. So the guys, as we mentioned before, don't have the truth, don't know the truth about why the Empire wants Omega, but at least they eliminated this possibility. But it's still frustrating that they've hit another dead end. They still don't have answers. And that's why I wish that as the audience, we could have walked away with like something new, because we already knew that. We knew that Omega wasn't Force sensitive. And it was great that the Bad Batch at least can eliminate that possibility. But we didn't walk away with anything new. We knew Asajj was going to be in this episode because they had been teasing it. She had been in the teaser trailer and in the full trailer. Had they kept Asajj under wraps, And we just saw her for the first time in this episode without any hints or anything like that, that would have been like, that wow. Alone would have been the thing to walk away from this episode to be like, wow.
Yeah.
But because they had revealed it before, we walked into it already knowing. Anyway, Hunter and Crosshair accuse Asajj of lying, but she ultimately tells them if Omega did have that potential, she'd have to be trained, which would mean leaving you behind. And Asajj also mentioned in the boat with Omega, even if you have force potential, they can't show you how to tap into it. So I was wondering if you got the impression that Omega, do you think Omega will have to leave the Bad Batch, especially if she develops force abilities? And I know we touched on it just briefly earlier, but do you think that's where it's headed?
Yeah, yes, it is. It will be a chance for the Bad Batch to be the soldiers that they have been trained to be, which is what makes them who they are, and go and help Rex and his group and whatever is happening over there, while Omega, in a way, it is safe because then she goes into hiding and she goes into this training and she is safe, and they're more, okay, she's safe. She's not with us, but we know she's safe. Mm-hmm, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So she's out of harm's way.
So it is, to me, it is a
possibility.
A possibility, and if I have to say, a more fitting possibility than them just constantly, because we know what is coming. Mm. We know what is happening. We know the story. Mm-hmm. So for them to stay together, just running and running until one by one they start dying, you know, it's more sour than the idea that she goes on to do something else while they go back to being who they are, you know?
Yeah, and you know, I have read interviews in which Michelle Ang describes the ending as very bittersweet. So it could be that that's referring to a possible parting of ways. That is a very bittersweet ending. And yeah, it's going to break us.
But to me, it's more of a
see you later. Not really, this is the last time we're going to see each other.
A more natural way of things solving themselves. Mm, mm-hmm. Because we know we are at a point in time on the Star Wars timeline where things are not heading to the best possible way.
Yeah.
And going back to what I said, that maybe this is the possibility of how things get built up so that the Jedi comes back, this will be the more natural way of being resolved, where she goes and she starts that process there while they go and do whatever it is that they need to do to make sure that those rebels are there to pick up the fight.
Right. You know, and thinking back, I mean, Star Wars The Clone Wars, Star Wars Rebels, Star Wars Resistance is the only exception because they did have an ending where everyone's together, everyone's hugging, but that wasn't their planned ending. It just conveniently ended that way. The series didn't have an actual ending to it. So I'm curious how that show would have ended, whether it also would have ended in a bittersweet parting of ways sort of thing, because that's what happened in Rebels. You know, everyone had to go their own separate way.
Yeah.
That's what happened in Star Wars The Clone Wars. Ahsoka and Rex stuck together for a bit, but they eventually had to go their separate ways as well. And so, yeah, it looks like maybe that's where it's headed for the Bad Batch too.
But if you think about it, it is a more natural way of ending.
Yeah.
Because it is the normal way of things.
It is. You know, you think about high school, you think about college, you form a family of friends and whatnot, and you make your own family, but you know, at the end of that journey, you end up going to separate paths. But yeah, so I guess we'll see what ends up happening with the team. And also, did you notice the misty and cloudy nature of Pabu? It wasn't as bright and colorful as it was.
Yeah.
It's like slowly showing us what's to come. and you know, Asajj said it. The fact is the Empire is after her and they won't stop. If I were you, I'd leave this place. You're not as safe as you think you are. Especially, how does she even find them? She says she has her ways. What ways?
What are those ways?
Magical Night Sister ways, I guess. Because, I mean, we did see something like that in the Clone Wars when Savage was giving something to look for Maul. And also, I think we got a bit of that in Ahsoka. And that's how they were able to find that Ahsoka was hiding in the the debris cloud out in space. So they do have their ways. whether Ventress has used those ways, we will see. Hopefully we will find out. But yeah, that, there's that harbinger aspect. She's warning them that there's something to come. And the misty and cloudy look of Pabu is another indicator. Oh, here's a good question for you. Do you think CX2 will be revealed as tech or coding now that we have 6 episodes left? I don't think so, right? Yeah. I mean, that's not a lot to work with.
Nah.
Yeah, so I don't think CX2 is anyone that we know. As cool as it would have been for it to have been Cody, like I was theorizing, I don't think it's going to happen.
Wasn't it revealed on an interview or something that CX2 is a whole new...
Oh, no, it was a tweet. It was a tweet from Jennifer Corbett where she said CX1 and CX2 are new characters or something like that. And people were like, new? What does this mean? So, yeah. And I don't think she was doing that as like a way to trick anyone. I think she was legitimately saying that they're new characters to like help calm the theories out there.
The wild theories.
And I'm worried that the people on Pabu are going to get captured like in that Zillow Beast episode.
Yeah.
And I really don't want that to happen. But I don't know what's going to happen. Oh, man. But anyway, a small spoiler warning here for anyone who hasn't seen the trailers or teasers. So please be aware that that's where we're about to discuss. But Cad Bane, we still haven't seen Cad Bane. And I told my best friend yesterday, and she's like, oh, my God, I completely forgot. I completely forgot that he showed up in the trailer. So yeah, we have 6 episodes left, and at some point, Cad Bane is going to show up. Like,
and this is where I fear that the next 6 episodes are going to be about bounty hunters following them. Nothing is really going to get picked up until the very end.
I have a feeling Omega's going to get the truth right then and there when she's in front of Palpatine. Oh, I don't want that to happen, but we will see. Maybe they've created it in a way where it makes sense. But man, that's a lot to consume.
Yeah.
In just 6 episodes. And then, of course, that mountainside mission with the truck. We still haven't seen that episode either. So, yeah. And Fee is also flying their ship at that point, too. So, like, at least Fee comes out of it alive.
We know the Empire comes to Pabu.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, Pabu. It gets invaded by the Empire. And it also looks like the Marauder gets destroyed.
I don't know.
I will be so upset if the Marauder gets destroyed. There was someone on Twitter, I can't remember now who said it, but it's like, would you do that to the Millennium Falcon? Why do all these other ships get destroyed, but not the Millennium Falcon? Nah. Like, these are such iconic ships for the characters. Like, would you do that to the Ghosts? I would riot if they ever. I mean, they came close because they destroyed poor Ezra destroyed the Phantom One, but if they ever destroyed the Ghost, I would riot. I'm like, nope, give me the destruction of the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah,
give me the destruction of the Millennium Falcon. Because why do you destroy these iconic ships, man? They're characters all on their own.
Yeah.
A few other notes, just very briefly. So I know at the very beginning when Crosshair had his arms crossed, and then when Hunter had his arms crossed, I love how Wrecker looked at both of them. And then
crossed his hair. his hands, too.
He crossed his arms, too. It was so funny.
Like, I love how if they're doing it, me too.
Yeah. It was so funny to see him mimic his brothers. Like Omega does.
Yeah.
And I love that he was cheerleading for Omega. Yeah. You can do it. And I love how Crosshair said, oh, we've taken down worse when they had that confrontation with Asajj. And I'm like, whomst are you talking about, Crosshair? Yeah. Who's worse than Asajj that you've taken down? And I love that line from Asajj, you know, we were pawns in the same war and we all lost. That kind of reminded me of that episode in Rebels with Ezra and Rex and Kanan, where they had to fight Kalani, the separatist droid who still thought he was fighting the separatist Republic War. Ezra's the one to, you know, help them realize we all lost in that war. It wasn't you or him that won. We all lost. We were all pawns. And I love how Asajj calls Omega, "You're an odd little clone.
I like it when she tells her, "Stop smiling. Yeah. It's unsettling."
It's unsettling.
Because that's all Omega does. She smiles.
Yeah.
She's really the little kid on Christmas when these things happen to her. Yeah. Like, oh God, this is so awesome.
And that's why I really like the relationship that was established between them, because I honestly would like to see more of that. They have such an opposite personality that it makes me want to see more. And then imagine if Rex and Echo were part of this. Asajj Ventress nearly killed Rex at one point. She was holding him with the Force in the movie, the Star Wars The Clone Wars movie. And of course, Echo knows of her transgressions and what she's done in the past. So I can only imagine them hearing what Hunter, when Hunter updates them, like, you met who? Yeah, so I would love to see those reactions. And then the next two episodes we'll be watching, because they're going to be released together, are Identity Crisis and Point of No Return. Like, that, those are serious titles right there.
So I'm guessing after Point of No Return, that's when we're going to start getting the nitty-gritty.
I'm sure. Yeah, that's when we're going to start. Stuff is going to start hitting the fan.
Yeah.
Essentially. I mean, Point of No Return.
I'm curious. Identity Crisis.
And I'm curious who that could be. Is that Omega? Maybe she's experiencing some identity crisis after what she's learned. Or is this for CX2? That guy that...
Yeah. So CX2 could be coming back.
Maybe. So who is experiencing this identity crisis? Yeah. Is what I want to know. But yeah, those are going to be our two episodes next week. And that's it. That's it for this episode today. Did you have any other thoughts about this?
No.
The Harbinger?
No, nothing else. Just, you know, the little things that make me laugh, make me happy.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope they still have some humor in the next six episodes.
Yeah.
But we will see.
Until next time, may the Force be with you.
Always.